Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I reached a whole new level of washedness today.
Oh dear. That only gets worse, by the way. What happened today?
I got excited about silverware. Silverware got delivered and I'm like excited to use it.
So I would argue that's not washedness. That is you're evolving and I would dare say maturing.
Impossible. No yeah. way.
No, good luck in your fight against that, Anthony. Comes for all of us.
It's not that I'm fighting against it. It's that like a lot of people have told me over the years, I am literally incapable of it is the thing.
Well, you know, maybe they were wrong.
I also, as I said to you on Twitter last night, you're going to have to do a little bit of the lifting, the heavy lifting.
Congratulations, Anthony. Happy Dodgers championship. That's right. Were you able to talk to family? And because I know you got some folks in your family.
I was surprised by how emotional I got over it. Like it was trippy. I think, you know, like we talked about my grandpa, you know, had passed away in March. So kind of sucks that he missed this by a matter of months, you know. But, you know, that said, he lived to be 96. So he probably saw, I think, almost all of their titles, basically, which now they have seven. So he would have seen six over the course of his lifetime, I believe. And then, you know, I was talking to dad, and my dad has had like a rough year, obviously losing his dad. And he also lost his brother. And dad is like he's about as emotional as my desk. And he was just like, I told him like, yeah, I Mookie hit that homer in the eighth, and I kind of sort of started tearing up because I knew right there the Dodgers had enough now to win the game. And he's like, you did what? I'm like, love you, Dad. but yeah, it was really cool. And it's funny because I think actually this is something worth talking about. We might have to throw out one of the topics we were going to cover today. We have to talk about Rondo. We have to talk about this regional bubbles idea, having seen Major League Baseball go through it. And then the players are apparently pushing for a return date closer to Martin Luther King Day. So those are the three main topics that we are going to cover. But actually the Dodgers Lakers thing is interesting because, you know, obviously we had a upfront look at the Lakers winning a championship this year. It's a very different championship in the sense that the Lakers had gone through so much tough times that you weren't positive you were ever going to get there. But even still, like, it's kind of ridiculous to say that about the Lakers, whereas the Dodgers, no, you legitimately thought you were never going to see them win a championship. They were finding all of these insane ways to lose late in the season. And, you know, they had, what was it, game three or four, where they lost on that last play that you basically had the chicken
dance. That was nuts. The double error. Yeah. Like everybody involved in the play screwed it up. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so you think, fuck, here we go again. And for the Lakers or the Dodgers to come back and win those two games back to back like that, and come back against, now they got lucky because I think Snell shouldn't have been pulled.
Woo. I'm like, as a casual baseball fan, I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't understand this sport very well. This was not the best year for analytics. And I know that people are like, analytics people cringe that it's just information, but there's also, I just strongly believe that making playoff decisions based on regular season data is fundamentally flawed, right? Yeah. Like if you want to come to me and say, this is what teams shoot from these respective areas in the playoffs over a course of a representative sample, then I think it's a more interesting conversation to be had. But so many of the, oh, you do this here or don't do that there. Like that guy, when the other team collectively goes, oh, everybody took him out, right?
Dude, Dave Roberts and Mookie Betts literally met eyes and Mookie smiled when Snell was pulled. They asked Mookie after the game, hey, man, what was going through your mind when you saw Snell walking off the mound? He's like, I finally have a chance. Yeah. Nobody was touching him. Nobody. And
yeah, just getting your opponent to feel that way, like, how do you quantify that? How do they hit after? I want to know that stat. How did they hit after they feel like they can't touch you? Because like part of winning a battle is believing you can win the battle in the first place. So right. if you take a team's spirit from them or a player's spirit from them, like you got to ride that. Yeah, that was wild, man. I don't know baseball, but that was wild to me.
We might not know baseball as obvious. We definitely don't know baseball as well as we know basketball. And so in that regard, we're definitely, you know, more casual about it, but you and I both played, we know what it feels like to be helpless in the batter's box against the pitcher. And then once that pitcher exits the game shifts, the momentum shifts. You can feel that. And that the Rays did that to themselves basically prematurely is, you know, thanks, man.
Yeah.
I hope Kevin Cash gets a ring.
Cause that was going seven. If they don't pull him, I'm pretty sure, but
yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. But anyway, to get back to like the comparison with the Dodgers and the Lakers, it was that, you know, I had some friends texting me, some people that cover basketball teams too, texting me and people were asking like, what does this feel compared to the Lakers? And it meant more to me just because it had been, I literally the first time ever they won in 1988. I was 2 years old. I was a year and some change. And so, you know, I was literally 2 years old because I'm an October baby. So, you know, you go from thinking, and by the way, you know, we talk about down years, the McCourts were stealing money from the franchise that they owned. You had that Carl Crawford trade that was just, it happened is the best thing you can say about it. And you know, lately they've been to 3 out of 4 World Series and all of them have just been, except for this one, have been just brutal. And not only were they brutal in the moment, but then you come to find out after the fact that those fuckers were cheating on you know, in those games. Mm-hmm. And it makes it hurt even more that, you know, you get even angrier at the fact that the Dodgers should be a dynasty. This could be a dynastic run. Mm-hmm. And it still feels like it could be moving forward. This is a young team and they don't have very, you know, their books are very clean moving forward. So they just have to pay their guys. And, you know, you go from all of those emotions to winning this one. And yeah, they won while Vin was still alive, which is really important. You know, to me, he got to celebrate after the fact. It kind of sucked that he, sent only a written out tweet. You know, he's been sending a lot of videos. I would have preferred that he like had, you know, was in a room popping a bottle of champagne. Like I picture Vin as more of like a cognac drinker anyway. He's just sitting there with like a cigar and a cognac. That would have been nice to see, you know, congratulations, Dodgers fans and all that stuff. But the Lakers and Dodgers thing is interesting because the Lakers are obviously more of a mercenary team. You know, they have Alex Caruso and they have Kyle Kuzma and to a lesser extent, THT and Devontae Kaycock as like their quote unquote young core right now. Everybody else was acquired either via free agency or trade. And while we did grow very close with that team, the Dodgers championship just feels a little different. That's why when Lonzo and Ingram and Randall and Russell were all here, or, you know, at their various stages, I was really pulling for that to work out because championships that are purely organic, they just feel a little different. It's not that they're better or worse or whatever. It's just a little different. And especially for the Lakers, because it is such a familial atmosphere. And so for winning this one where Corey Seager is, you know, drafted and raised up by the Dodgers, Bellinger, Bueller, Kershaw, Jansen, Baez, Urias, Gonzalez, like all those guys are all drafted by the Dodgers. The guys that aren't drafted by the Dodgers, Turner, who's a jackass, right? for what he did after the game, Muncy, those guys weren't drafted by the Dodgers, but they were picked up off of the scrap heap. So a lot of the Dodgers, like except for Betts, everybody basically it's outside of Betts, are these homegrown players that, you know, seeing them win and going through the ups and downs of their career to this point, you really get to look back on that. Whereas with the Lakers, we look back on the ups and downs of the one season. And while there were some, this is an extraordinary season in terms of ups and downs, the Dodgers championship is just, you know, for a couple different, you know, for a couple different reasons, just a little different. It it hit me a little bit more.
I think the ascension is one of the primary aspects that's different too, right? Like, yes, yeah. Lakers don't have a ton of homegrown guys on this team that won the title, but I mean, it was 7 years that were very tough, often not 32,
yeah,
like the Dodgers, right? But we also didn't go through the thing that most teams go through, or at least in the past. This has been changing over the last decade, but where, you know, you get to the second round and get knocked out, and then in the second year you get to the conference finals, mm-hmm, and you get knocked out in the finals. And like you said, with the Dodgers, there were so many times where the Dodgers just came up short and yeah, barely missed winning a World Series. The Lakers didn't have that. We were bad great champion, right? Like, yeah. And so there was none of that playoff failure, that being so close to your final goal but not being able to get there. So I'm sure that's very satisfying too as a Dodger fan, right? So yeah, but the Lakers have rarely been all that homegrown, right?
Well, basketball is just different in that sense. Like, sure, baseball, some of these guys you draft, basically, little known fact, I was drafted coming out of high school in like the 275th round by like the Atlanta Braves.
Oh yeah.
You know, you get drafted out of high school, you get an offer comes and they're going to charge me like $50,000 to they're going to be like,
I'm like, you know, some people are going to believe you with this shit, right?
No, they're barely going to pay you to go out there and try out for this minor league thing. And you're going to be there for a year and then wind up going to college anyway. But for some of these guys, you know, that they've either been drafted by the Lakers or the Dodgers, or they've been on their radar since like they were in high school. You know, it's just with basketball, you only have five guys. So, you know, and one or two of those guys have to be superstars. And if they aren't, you know, you aren't in that situation. So you got to do whatever you can to acquire those superstars, or those 7 years that we just went through before they won this championship here. It goes longer than that. Just ask Minnesota, just ask Sacramento, mm-hmm, just ask those fans of those teams. It takes a lot to acquire those superstars. In baseball, it's almost a borderline individual sport. And so the chemistry aspect, I think that's one way that the Dodgers or the Lakers championship meant, you know, something more. That's why it keeps it close to this Dodgers one, because, you know, the Dodgers series or the Dodgers season was like 60 games long. And then, you know, it was a relatively short time with this team. Whereas with the Lakers, we've been with these guys for a full calendar year.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're just different. They're different, you know, feelings of accomplishment. And yet,
isn't it nice to be able to compare championships?
Well, that's
championship that my favorite teams won this month do I like more?
You know, which victory cigar? That's why, if you guys can hear it in my voice, I had a cigar last night. But which victory cigar felt, you know, tasted better in the moment? But the thing I'll say, though, is for the city of Los Angeles, that's who I'm the happiest for. You know, the fact that there are people out there who stuck by the Dodgers for all of this time. There are people who we know were ride or die for the Lakers for all of this time. And, you know, yeah, it sucks that we all can't get together and celebrate the way that we normally would. Could you imagine the party that we'd be throwing right now if this all wasn't going on? But whenever we are able to get together, and whenever we are able to enjoy that release and hug each other and celebrate the fact that these two teams that mean a hell of a lot to a ton of people, I you know, it's the people, it's the fans that I'm really the most excited for, you know, and both teams have generational fans. This is a family thing, man. Like there are people who I'm thinking of my grandpa. That's two generations ago, you know, and for a whole bunch of people, like one day Avery is going to think of her great grandpa. I'm going to tell her about her great grandpa who got to see Jackie Robinson play. And then I'm going to tell her about my dad who got to see Sandy Koufax play. And then I'm going to tell, you know, she's going to tell her kids about her dad who got to see, you know, Walker Buehler and Mookie Betts and Clayton Kershaw, mm-hmm, play. it's that's the thing I've thought about the absolute most in you know, celebrating maybe a little too much over the last 24 hours. But the thing I've thought about the most is the family aspect of both of these teams, that this is a deep rooted, both these teams are deep rooted in this city that has been through a lot this year. And I know how much this probably meant to a whole bunch of people. And to all of you, I say cheers. Let's keep this party going.
There's a spirit of collaboration that both teams share that plays right into the family dynamic that you're talking about. And in a time where the country's so divided, that winning the day is very encouraging. And I think I think there are lessons to be learned from, I can't speak to the Dodgers journey as much, although I've followed as a casual fan for a few years.
Did you hear me ranting about them for the last like 2-3 years?
Sure. Right. And, like you said, a lot of those guys have been there for a long time working toward a common goal. They've got, you know, when Clayton Kershaw decides to talk to Justin Turner, right? Mm-hmm. That's, they've been teammates for years now, 4 or 5 years. And that's like, there's history there. Right. And the Lakers don't have that. Although like LeBron James and Anthony Davis go way back. Right. And yeah. KCP, right. With Clutch, it's kind of different how the NBA just works in general, but a lot of the Lakers do know each other. It's not that they just met on this team this year, but that the both teams, they're really, when you get groups of people to root for each other, who work together, who root for each other's successes, that's when you get the best results. And that's something that both the Lakers and Dodgers really personified.
Absolutely. All right. This was a longer first segment here. So when we come back, we're going to segue awkwardly back to this Rondo report. Apparently, just like a day after, we talked about the most Rondo thing being him potentially going to the Clippers. So we got to talk about that. We got to talk about, if we have time, I'm not positive we're going to. We have time, we'll talk about the start date reports, the public negotiation that's going on right now, and see how much time we have after that. We'll probably have to throw some of this for tomorrow. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Rock Auto. Head on over to rockauto.com, where you'll find a family business that has served auto parts to customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com for shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clips delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specs, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Learning how to play the drums on pots and pans right now. I don't know if you guys can hear that, so sorry about that in the background. There's nothing really you can do there. Otherwise, you pull her off of those things and she just cries. You guys don't want to hear that either. Let's talk about this Rondo report, and I know we have to be kind of delicate around it, or you have to be kind of delicate around it. We can just pretend you walked out of the room when I say some of the stuff I'm about to say.
No, if I can keep stuff to the basketball court, I'm okay.
Yeah. So. Let's go that route then. Personally speaking, and I know the Lakers aren't going to operate this way because they are not as kind of cold as this is going to sound. But personally speaking, I would call Rondo's bluff. If the Clippers want to offer Rondo more than he was making last season, and for longer than a 1 or 2 year contract, you say, hey man, thank you for the championship. Best of luck with the Clippers. And you try to go and you go and find somebody at about his rate that you can, you know, find that production for anywhere.
You don't put any additional financial value on what he did in the playoffs?
It's tough because it was so different from the regular season,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
it matters.
It does. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like what I'm weighing here is the literal production, right? What he did for the Lakers don't win a championship without Rajon Rondo, flat out. That is objectively true. That is inarguable.
Okay.
That said, can you bank on that again? You know, he was so bad in the regular season. And then he steps on the gas in the postseason. Well, what if he steps on the gas next year? He's a year older. What is he? He's like 33.
33.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so if he's 33 years old and he tries to step on the gas next year and Carr doesn't move, then, and you're paying him more than you paid for him this year, which means that you have fewer resources to go elsewhere across your roster, then what?
What if he steps on the gas and he's what he was this year, or he's very close to it? What's that worth?
Well, I mean, the production he gave, I would say what he did in the playoffs, he was a $5 or $6 million player, I would say.
Okay.
You know, in terms of just sheer value. I get nervous about paying for the outlier. You know,
the outlier though for him in his playoff career? I mean, playoff Rondo, we were told that was a thing, and when it came time for that to be a thing, it was a thing. So I would argue that it's not an outlier at all. He just doesn't like his approach toward the playoffs is significantly different than the regular season.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, to go back to what we talked about earlier with the analytics, this is where it's tough, right? Because you're talking about regular season production, which is very different from postseason production. It's a completely different portion of games, but it's still a much larger sample size than the postseason was. The regular season's plural, by the way, that we've seen from Rajon Rondo immensely outweigh the stretch of games where he was productive in sheer number of games.
Yeah, there's more. Yeah, I would say the smaller amount of games where he was great in the playoffs, I put more weight on that than I do the regular season, even though there are many more games in the regular season. The stakes are just not comparable.
So are you okay? So you would pay extra for the 16 wins?
I mean, I would pay extra for the 16 wins. I mean, there's got to be a calculus of, is there someone else who we could bring in that they don't even have to replicate, you know, what Rondo would do, but like Pelinka is going to have to say, hey, we think this guy's worth this much and that guy's worth that much. And then kind of cobble, this is how much space we have to work with. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, does he, and I don't know the answer to this, but does he be like, hey, we've got this guy valued as an $8 million a year player, but we know we can get him for $3 million a year. You probably prioritize somebody like that. Even if they're not the best player, they're some of the best value, right? And that was one of the things that Pelinka did an extraordinary job on with the back end of this roster was we had Keith and Dwight and Caruso and a couple other dudes that all combined to make like $12 million a year. It's like, oh, those are four rotation players, Rondo being one of them, mm-hmm. right? And so if he's identified other people, right? Like if for anyone, right? If the number gets too high, you've got to have a walk away point at some point. But I would argue that you absolutely pay for that type of production. And I think it's fair to assume that he will be less effective than he was in his age 34 season than his age 33 season. Mm-hmm. But the degree to which that will be true will be I don't think it's going to fall off of a cliff. It's probably more of a decline. And so again, I can't really speculate too much on this guy should be back, this guy should not. But I do think that Rondo's ability to contribute in the playoffs is a compelling argument to pay him more than what you initially proposed.
Yeah. And it's hard for me to even try to disagree with that, by the way. You know, this is a difficult predicament that the Lakers are in, or that this is a difficult decision that Rob Pelinka is going to have to make. Part of the issue here, and I know you can't talk about, you know, specific players. So I don't need you to weigh in on the list itself, but the market out there for guards isn't fantastic, you know, in terms of, you have like Fred VanVleet, but the Lakers don't have a chance at landing him. And then when you go down, you know, you have the DJ Augustines of the world, the Austin Rivers of the world, Jeff Teague is going to be out there. So like, are you going to find, you know, and then just like right down the list is Rondo. So like the drop off or the other players in that class of player that Rondo was in, there aren't very many of them. And I think that's something that, by the way, Rondo's agents is probably factoring into this public negotiation. I don't think for a second, if Rondo was going to make the same amount of money for the Clippers as he would the Lakers, he would go back to the Lakers. Yeah. I just think the Lakers stuck with him all this time and put him in an opportunity to show everybody and remind everybody what playoff Rondo could possibly be, that I think he would, you know, there's some loyalty there. But, you know, if the Clippers offer him, you know, like $1.5 million more than the Lakers would, if it's $1.5 million and you can get Augustine for what Rondo made last year, I would personally go with Augustine. You know, I just feel like what he is as a player
perform in those high level playoff games the way Rondo can.
I would say so. He's not going to be asked to do very much. The other thing too to keep in mind is that like KCP is going to want a bigger role. Avery Bradley is going to be in the rotation all over again. And Alex Caruso is going to have a bigger role next year. So you might not even need Rondo to the same extent that they needed him this year. So and even if he does, you know, produce the way he does, the Lakers might have people on their roster who can do a lot of those things anyway. And also, by the way, defend, you know, because he's a small guard. Small guards don't age well, especially on the defensive end of the court. And we know what happens to guys that can be matchup hunted in a postseason series. So like all of this needs to be factored in. I legitimately don't know.
I mean, all of that was true that he was a small guard and he did have his, it's funny, like Rondo's finals were really up and down. I was either cursing under my breath or I was like, this guy is exactly what we need, that ball handling guard. And really it came down to whether or not we were being threatened in a game, like if we needed to win. So for example, like his game three was terrible, his game five was terrible, that was the one where we thought, yeah, his game five was terrible, his game six was wonderful, his game, you know, four, yeah, I think it was okay, but and or game, his game two was fantastic, right? So that's the calculus though, is I that would be my one word of warning with respect to Rondo, is whomever we bring in needs to be able to have good size in those high level series. Cause I know Rondo can play in those and can be one of your closing five. Even he was that on a title team this year. And I don't think those guys are that, you know, pervasive. There are plenty of guys who can get buckets and produce fine on a, you know, on Minnesota or some team in the regular season. It's just, it's so different than a playoff environment, especially when you get to the conference finals and finals, that if we are, that needs to be factored into the calculus. Of course, there's some point where you got to say, well, good luck, right? And and we're not capable of bringing you back at that number. But I just think that playoff contribution should factor in very heavily.
Yeah. Let's take one more second here. I have one more question to ask you about Rondo and team makeup, depending on how this all goes. And then we'll really quickly touch on the start of the season where the players appear to want it. So the last thing on this Rondo topic, let's say the Lakers lose Rondo and don't do anything, and they go into next year with the backcourt combination of Caruso, Bradley, KCP, and Green. How confident would you be in that combination there? And then they would probably have like, you know, some like fifth guard who maybe never plays.
So this is without Rondo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how would you feel if the Lakers just lose him and don't replace him?
I think we need that ball handler, right? That's something mm-hmm. that's a skill set that I have felt needed to be represented from way back to the beginning of last season. And I didn't think Rondo could do it at a high enough level anymore. And I was wrong about that. Mm-hmm. And so if we would let that ball handling guard get out, who can penetrate and get to the rim and create havoc the way that he did in the playoffs, like I'd be concerned, right? That we'd need somebody else aside from LeBron James and Anthony Davis to an extent, right? That can dribble a basketball in a high end series and penetrate a defense. So yeah, I'd be concerned if we let Rondo walk and didn't replace him.
It's weird. I would almost feel better if the Lakers found a trade partner for Bradley. Like, I'd feel better about bringing Rondo back if they didn't have Bradley there, because
I've got too many guys for.
Yeah. Too many guys who want minutes. It's one thing when you have just like straight bodies, you know, and like Quinn Cook isn't expecting to play very much, or Troy Daniels isn't expecting to play very much. But when you have, it's kind of a fine line between depth and too many cooks, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think when you have Bradley, KCP, Green, Rondo, and Caruso, that's a lot of dudes who are good enough to play and are going to expect to play.
So while I agree with that, I would almost look at it from the opposite perspective of not enough cooks. Like, we need a cook, because all of those guys are role players who thrive off of other players mm-hmm. more so than with the ball in their hands, right? Like, obviously they're guards in the NBA, so of course they can do stuff with the ball in their hands, but they're not Rondo in terms of give him the ball, he's going to run the offense type of guy. And so I just think that leaves you with a roster that only has LeBron James that can really do that.
Yeah.
And I thought we were deficient at that anyway, and Rondo stepping up really made that, it made it better. It made it not a fatal flaw, but I agree that there are too many that, like your point about it being kind of a numbers game. Yeah, that's totally true. It's just that if you take Rondo out of that equation, you don't have a particular skill set represented that I think is critical later in the playoffs.
Yeah. I think that's why I'd be more comfortable losing Bradley than Rondo, I guess, to your point. It sounds like that's where you're at too, where it's just a matter of like Bradley's skill set is represented by KCP and Caruso, and to a lesser extent Green, whereas Rondo, his ability to dribble and create and even throw a damn entry pass is not very well represented elsewhere on the roster. All right, let's go ahead and move on really, really quickly here and touch on this report here that came via, who was it? Woj? I think Woj was the first reporter who was touching on this stuff. But the players apparently would prefer to start closer to Martin Luther King Day, which runs contrary to, it seemed like, the governor's preference of starting on Christmas. And that's why, you know, one of the things we talked about yesterday was it felt like public negotiation when they released, like it was so early when, you know, talking about camp starting about a month from now, that's so early, it felt like public negotiation. And then I think that was pretty much confirmed by the player's preference to start till, you know, January 18th. Do you have a personal preference there? Is there a spot where you would rather start?
So I'm almost always going to be on the side of the players, and this mm-hmm. is no exception. I do think that it's important to acknowledge some of the, you know, the financial pressures. Also today, there was a report from Woj that and Zach Lowe that revenue dropped 10%, which I thought it was going to be more than that from one season to another. But
apparently they recouped like $1.5 billion from the bubble.
Hell yeah, man. And that's great. That's great for the league.
Gotta start making bubble machines.
But still, a 10% drop in revenue is significant. And there are financial pressures on all parties involved. Mm-hmm. Christmas Day is also a big day for the NBA from a marketing and a financial standpoint.
Yeah.
And so there is, while I, in aggregate, I support the players and that I would prefer a January 18th type of start time as well, I do think that there are legitimate concerns on the other side, right? Where that impact everybody. I am not a a lawyer. I'm not privy to the financials. It's not my place to really speak on all of that. But while I support the players, I do think that they're, that if they put their heads together, they can find more common ground that suits everybody's interests. It's very similar to, because this is so unprecedented in figuring out how we're going to proceed, it reminds me a lot of going into the bubble. What is the bubble going to look like?
Yeah.
When are we going to start back up? Everybody's figuring things out. And we had a similar type of negotiating in public dynamic there too. I just think that in total, everybody has reasons to have a lot of things in common in terms of their goals with what they do with this season. So it's, to me, this is early-ish negotiations that hopefully that proceeds, because you need to have these two parties as much on the same page as possible.
So December 22nd versus January 18th, you're now, you know, there's a month of negotiating gap that needs to be made up. And if I was to predict one way or the other, I think it starts closer to Christmas. I thought it was interesting that, and one of the things that screamed public negotiation was when they said December 22nd, not Christmas, right? So that if they do start on Christmas, you know, the players technically won 3 days worth of negotiation there. But look, that revenue matters, and you can't, while I am like you on the player side on the vast majority of these things, they have to understand that the later they start and the more that they want to give, or the less that they want to give up on in this negotiation, that's eventually going to start coming out of their pocket too, because it is a sure. revenue split.
They know that.
Yeah. And so if you're saying, you know, we're tired, all these things, take a few nights off and start early and take a few nights off, so the revenue is generated. That's where I'm kind of at right now.
That seems reasonable. Like, play on Christmas, but rest on other days. Yeah. That said, it's not me who just went
You're right.
All
I'm
of
in
this,
terrible
right?
shape
for us to say. So yeah. Both sides have valid, I know that sounds like kind of a cop-out, but it's true. Both yeah. sides have valid concerns that will need to be addressed, but I think that there's enough shared motivation where if they put their heads together, they can find a good deal of common ground between both parties.
It's interesting too, because there's even some negotiation amongst the players union on this front too, right? There are guys that haven't played in like 6 months and they're saying, yeah, let's start on Christmas. Screw it. Can we go earlier? Can we get the gravy train running again? Even sooner. And then you have, you know, the Lakers and the Heat basically are the group of 30 guys who are saying, guys, come on, I'm exhausted. So it's, and yet even with that going on, you have the loudest voice in the room in that minority, right? Where it's LeBron who's probably saying, no, we got to push this back a little bit. And I don't know if there's anybody in the crew that's been in the group that hasn't played in as long as with as much leverage as LeBron James has. So that's something to keep in mind here too. The whole dynamic here is it's not just players versus governors here. It's actually factions of players that have different mindsets than amongst each other, and they have to get on the same page before they even can try to talk and negotiate with the governors.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I suppose there is a contingent of players that are like, hey, let's get it going because we haven't played. We don't care. Hell, it even gives them a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
The team that just won the NBA championship is exhausted while you've been raring to go for 6 months. Like, hey, I am mad at you, right?
If you want to. If I'm KD, I'm like, wait, awesome. I can get a tired LeBron while I haven't played in like a year?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That said, if they force it on the players, just know that the players will take time off, right? And
yeah.
maybe that might be a national game that you would love to see them play in, and they decide to sit for that. And if you want to, you know, the league has fined players for or threatened fines for sitting, and especially on the national TV games. this is something that, again, will need to be negotiated rather than forced on anybody, because if it's forced on the players, I think that there will be some unintended consequences of that. Where players look out for themselves, right, and look out for their own safety and health. So, yeah, again, we could find common ground on this.
I think so too. And I think they will. Like, to the governor's credit, their relationship with the players is in a much healthier place than most, you know, owner governor player relationships tend to be. That's one of my favorite aspects of covering the NBA is, like, I remember when I used to cover the NFL, just by comparison, it was no partnership. It was a group of really, really old white dudes telling mostly African-American players, we say jump, you say how high, period. Anybody has a problem with that? Look what happened to Cap, you know? That's the nice thing about covering and being involved with the league is in this sense, progressive as the NBA is. That's going to do it. What's up? Do you have anything else?
No, we're good.
Okay. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We have, we'll pick up on a lot of this stuff. We're probably going to get more, like, this is how public negotiations work. So we're probably going to get some more information out over the next couple of days about who is feeling what and where some of these factions are coming from. We weren't able to get to some of the other, there was one more topic that that I wanted to get to, and we weren't able to, so we will start with that tomorrow. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Talk to you tomorrow.